up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. Drance covers the team for The Athletic. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And a big show today, special show today. It's our last show of the year together. Another season in the books, if you can believe it, Drancer.
I can't believe it.
Truly stunning. How did they let us do it again?
This was year four?
Year four.
Yeah, and we'll see about year five.
We will see about year five. We always like to throw a little mystery in. We're like you remember the TV show Lost?
Oh, yeah.
Every season has to end with a cliffhanger.
You're the polar bear?
Well, I don't know about that. But and you're the smoke monster,
I'm the
obviously.
Smoke monster, yeah. Yes. For sure. Yeah, I mean, look. We always have fun doing this. It's going to be an enjoyable couple hours doing this one more time. And thank you to all of you, our dear loyal listeners, for interacting with our show, for everything you send us in the 650, 650 Dunbar Lumber text line, all the funny memes, all the supportive messages we get over the course of the year. You guys make it worthwhile. We have a blast doing this together, and we have a blast doing it with you guys.
And again, we'll see.
Hopefully, we get to keep going. We'll see.
We'll see what happens. It always makes it sound like we're like about to get laid off, which you never know. Who knows? Anyways, we got a big show.
Tomorrow is guaranteed to nobody.
That's right. That's so true. I mean, it is.
I know it's dark though.
Yeah, that's fair. We got a big show coming up, as always on a Wednesday. We'll do the crossover, of course, final edition of the crossover for the season.
I already talked to those boys today.
There you go. So you get your fill of Rick Dhaliwal and Don Taylor, and Jason Buchla, of course, will join us at 1 o'clock.
Our Wednesday
as well.
Shows rock.
They're fantastic.
Let's go.
We're going out on a high note.
Yes.
And before we get to the crossover with our pals Donnie and Dolly, should mention. On day two of NHL free agency here, Canucks make their first external acquisition, actually, as a free agent, or at least a clear NHL-level free agent. I know they signed some minor league deals yesterday, but they signed veteran defenseman Pierre-Olivier Joseph to a one-year $775,000 deal.
Former Emily Castonguay client.
There you go.
When she was a player agent, so there's connections there. Of course, was also a Pittsburgh Penguins draft pick. So there's connections there. That was also a Rutherford and Alvin era pick by the Penguins. So some significant familiarity between the player and various levels of Canucks hockey operations. I think, you know, it's a one-way deal, $775K. Yeah. And I think he's going to be in really tough to make this roster, but this club still needed depth. You know, you don't extend Noah Juulsen. You do need, you know, you don't tender a qualifying offer to Cole McWard. There's some like credible 9-10 guys that are going to be permitted to walk, and Vancouver's 6-7-8 defensemen are basically rookies.
Yeah.
Right? Elias Pettersson, Tom Volander, Mancini, right? And then like Kudryavtsev. Is that probably 6-9?
Yeah.
So you're one injury away from having two.
Brisebois thrown there.
Right, Brisebois. Yeah, the club, by the way, is high on Brisebois.
Yeah.
Forever. No, like truly, they even believe that he could have had a bigger impact the last two seasons if not for the injury issues that he's worked through, which they believe are behind him. So don't ignore Guillaume Brisebois as a body as I did. That's a mistake. Point is you are one injury away from a rookie, from having multiple rookies and or a rookie and Guillaume Brisebois in your lineup. So you needed some depth reinforcements. But, you know, as this exists on a whiteboard in the coach's office off of Griffith's Way, the Canucks they will go into training camp hoping for, wanting, and giving both Tom Volander and Elias Pettersson every opportunity to make this team out of camp.
Yeah.
That is on the whiteboard how this club is planning and most likely to start the season, provided that those players come in and, you know, have had a good summer and look prepared and fit.
All right. It is Wednesday. That means it's time for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They're the co-hosts of Donnie and Dolly. On Check TV, you can watch it Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. They join us every Wednesday for the crossover. Fellas, what's going on?
All good.
Lots of hockey.
Lots of hockey. Lots of...
And then we're off until 2027.
Yeah. Maybe 2030.
An extended hiatus a sabbatical. For you guys. Very exciting.
I'm bringing this up because I said it on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot of time off. Like,
sure.
Just like you guys. And I said it on the show yesterday, and that guy might have said 2028 at one point, and a lot of the viewers bought it. And they thought I was serious.
It was just a joke.
They thought you were doing like a sabbatical backpacking around Europe or something for a couple of years, and then you'd be back.
Sure.
Sounds great.
Yes. They thought something.
Yeah. Donnie and Dolly go on the road.
Yeah.
All right, so day one of free agency, and I think it took a lot of us by surprise when, 20, 25 minutes in, Rick, I think you broke the news that Brock Besser, at least as I read it on air, Brock Besser was going to be remaining a Vancouver Canuck. We heard from him earlier this morning, and it really just sounded like he could never quite wrap his mind around what it would look like to go to another city. He always really, really wanted to stay here. The Canucks made up the term to 7 years to get the deal done. What's your reaction? I mean, one, to Brock Besser returning in and of itself, but also just to the lack of change that it looks like we're going to see on the roster for the Canucks now.
Well, before striking his deal with the Canucks, Besser had 5 serious offers. Before the Canucks called, he was going down the pathway of signing elsewhere. And then the Canucks call with 1 hour to free agency. But the Canucks didn't call Besser until they found out what was going on with Christian Dvorak, because they were in on Dvorak big time. And it was up. The agent was smart. He got 2 teams desperate for centers going at it, Vancouver and Philly. Canucks offered term. Flyers offered huge money. He took the money, and Rick Tocchet coached him in Arizona, remember? And by the way, the Canucks, Adam Foote and Connor Garland, strong recruiting pitches to Dvorak. Garland played with him in Arizona too. But I do believe their number one target for centers was Michael Granlund, but they got scared when they found out that number's going to start with a 7. They couldn't do that. You know, all these people, and Donnie and I got it today. Oh, my God, they're going after Christian Dvorak. People, they only had $7 million to play with. What are you getting with $7 million? They wanted to get 2 or 3 players with the $7 million, if possible, right? They just couldn't go to Philly's $5 million. But they like Dvorak because of faceoffs, his consistency. They just liked Dvorak a lot. And by the way, if they would have got Dvorak and they were right in there, they would have played him as the third line center, not second. So they go out on Dvorak. They call Besser. They cut the deal. Good for them.
Yeah, Dvorak really is a bottom six center, right? So they probably...
They're
probably better off with Besser, truth be told.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a top six winger, and at some point, I remember Rick saying that, at some point, okay, you're not going to get a top 2 center, so maybe you got to focus on getting a top 6 winger.
Yep.
And, Brock Besser, that deal, I think people are pretty happy with it. Guys, the thing that blew me away the most about yesterday, and, maybe they went out of their way to point this out, Garland, Demko, and Besser, all Americans, by the way. But just to talk about how they got along so well, or how they get along so well. And I only say that's surprising because of all the BS we heard about Miller versus Pettersson. And that was one of my takeaways, is that these guys really wanted to stay. They love Vancouver. They see promise, I guess. But the fact that they're just... they seem to be one big happy family. Yeah. I think to say that publicly, I think that surprised a lot of people. Like Besser saying, I'm paraphrasing here, but he got butterflies in his stomach thinking, hey, it's possible I might be staying in Vancouver. Isn't it great? And I found it really surprising. And I was happy for Vancouver fans to hear that sort of thing, that despite everything that happened last year, you got guys who want to be here. Guys who know the market well.
And Donnie nailed it. And Demko's agent was on our show today, and he gave us a really good tidbit. And he said that he talked to Thatcher about playing out his contract in Vancouver And signing as a free agent, closer to home, we know where his home is, San Diego, right? He could play close to mom and dad. There's three teams 2 feet away. And Thatcher told his agent, no, I don't want to play out. I don't want to go to become a free agent. I want to sign in Vancouver. So Donnie's right. Now, I got a ton of agents telling me UFA players don't want to come to Vancouver, and I got a ton. But that doesn't apply to Besser, Garland, and Demko. These guys wanted to come back. They told all their agents, get us back to Vancouver. That's a good sign for Vancouver.
Yeah, and you just hope now that it translates to performance on the ice, right? Because I don't want to minimize it. It is great that they all wanted to be here and they all wanted to stick around and continue to work together. But this is also a lot of years of these players playing together, and the success, the sustained success, just really hasn't happened. We had the one incredible season where they go to the second round against the Oilers, but in terms of actual, you know, being a consistent playoff team, growing, developing, being consistently professional on and off the ice, it's been a struggle. So I agree with you, Donnie, but it's a good sign for Canucks fans, and it was probably really good to hear that. But I also understand the skepticism, kind of thinking, okay, hey, that's great. You love the city. You love being on the team. You love playing together. Is that going to translate to a more consistently successful team?
Well, the other thing that stuck out yesterday, in particular the conversation, the Zoom conversation with Connor Garland, is the focus more so on what you just talked about. The playoff, the successful season a couple of seasons ago, the playoff series, the successful playoff series against Nashville, taking Edmonton to seven games. And I almost got the feeling when he was talking, and Besser touched on this as well, that they feel that's, and I know there are players that are not there anymore, like Miller and not Zadorov, but they feel those are the real Canucks versus what we saw last year, which just got, you know, took a massive left turn because of Miller versus Pettersson. And I think that these guys believe that Rick Tocchet or not, Adam Foote or not, that they believe that's their team versus what we saw last year. Now, they may be completely wrong, but that's the sense I got from them yesterday.
Well, what do you feel? Do you agree with them? Do you buy it?
Well, I think without JT Miller and without Zadorov there, I have a hard time buying it. But I'm going to guess that those guys know more about hockey than I do, and
no
they
doubt.
Can say, you know, they believe it or not, but you know, we'll see what they actually play the game. So
yes,
that there is that at that level anyway. So I have a hard time believing it, but the fact they say they stayed says a lot. They're putting their money or. Well, somebody's putting their money where their mouth is, but they're sticking around. So actions speak louder than words. That's what I was looking for. There you go.
Yeah, and it is good. Thomas, I have to admit to you, I've talked to all three agents of all these three players that have come back, and all three of them told me at some point they said, get it done in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And, you know, Garland made it very clear to Judd Moldover that I love Vancouver and I want to come back. And all these guys, like Donnie said, they're close. I do wonder, now that they've got these three American guys done, there's one big American player left in a year, year and a half. Can they do him, Quinn Hughes? And does this help in keeping Quinn Hughes in town? I will always maintain the only way Quinn Hughes is going to stay is if they win, they have a good culture, and cut out the soap opera crap that we saw this year. The guy's been here 7, 8, 9 years. All he's seen is soap opera crap. Cut it out. You know, have a good organization from top to bottom. Why do you think those guys in Florida signed back there? They love it. They love the owner. They love the GM. They love Luongo. They love the coach. It that's where Canucks have to get to with Quinn Hughes. They've got to be able to say, Quinn's got to say, I love this place, great culture. I love the owner. I love the coach. I love the GM, all that stuff. And maybe they get him back.
I think it's a good point, Rick, and I think almost in a way how we're evaluating these deals right now, we almost have to wait a year, because if we're sitting here in a year and we're talking about Quinn Hughes has just signed an 8-year extension or a, you know, 6 or 7 year extension with the Vancouver Canucks, I think you could plausibly look back at Besser and Garland and Demko all staying and say, hey, maybe that was the start of the dominoes that led to it. If Quinn Hughes decides to leave anyways, not that you're necessarily devastated that you've signed all of these guys, but I also don't know how much it changes your position. You know what I mean? Like, I think we could end up looking at this as laying the groundwork for signing Quinn Hughes,
Or it could be, well, Quinn Hughes left and they're still in a very desperate position.
At the very least, too, the individual decisions still tell us something, right? It was concerning when Rick Tocchet decided to depart. Do you guys remember when Alex Edler, Mr. Would Never Wave at the trade deadline, decided to depart after that 2021 season? Like, that was a red flag. In retrospect, but also I think the way we interpreted it at the time. So the fact that Besser at the gym 5 minutes from the market opening with a plethora of options to join contenders and go to warm places and go to cold places and, you know, choose your adventure, Brock. The fact that he really only had eyes for the Canucks, I do think tells us something. And it's something that we're welcome. Like, that's welcome news, especially given the way that Tocchet, you know, said thanks but no thanks, given his level of information about this organization and where this team is going. This is different, and that does matter.
Yeah, and you bring up Rick Tocchet. By the way, I'm not so sure the only negative of yesterday, I'm not so sure how much of a workout Brock Besser got in. It sounded like he was on his phone the whole time. But
he was like me
at
the gym.
You bring up Rick Tocchet, and yeah, well, like all of us, I think. Hey, but with Rick Tocchet, Adam Foote comes in, and guys, the other thing that really became apparent yesterday, you know, because we wonder about Adam Foote. This is his first head coaching job. We know how things went in Kelowna. One thing became apparent yesterday is that he was called upon by Patrick Helvin, by Jim Rutherford, referred to by Connor Garland and Brock Besser as somebody they really respect.
Yeah.
And so we're getting a sense of that maybe this is, you know, despite all the skepticism, maybe this is the right guy. I know it's the Canucks. I know things have gone wrong in the past. I get all that. But there was a lot of endorsing Adam Foote yesterday. And that, again, that's something else where I feel good for Canuck fans that, you know, yesterday probably gave them more confidence in the guy who's going to be behind the bench.
Bingo, Donnie, great point. And for that crowd that was ripping the Canucks for signing Foote and bypassing Malhotra, you know, there's your nut bars on Twitter, right? The group of five or whatever they are. But I'll tell you something.
Who are the five?
This is what I
Who
mean.
Are the five,
Adam
Rick? Who
Foote,
are the five?
The Chester Bling guy and his group of people. But listen, what I'm telling you is, how bad do they look now? All these Canuck veterans are saying, we love Adam Foote. Would they have come back if Malhotra was your head? Like, you know, the easy thing is to stir the pot and say, oh, my God, the Manny's going to go to Dallas. Oh, they should have gave him the spot. Hey, guys, they made the right call on the coach. Time will tell. But when these players, like Donnie say, when Brock Besser says Adam Foote's a big reason why he came back, they made the right call. Believe me.
Sorry, will time,
yeah,
time
which
will
is
time
it?
Tell, or are yeah, these people yeah. wrong?
Of course.
Okay, but of course.
I can't decide.
Hey, by the way, Manny's got a 2-year deal. Hey, Manny's got a 2-year deal in Abbotsford, right? So that guy next year, if he has it, although I don't think Abbotsford's better. They let a lot of guys go, guys. I told you the band wouldn't be back. They wouldn't give Sammy Blaze a 1-year deal. They didn't give DiGiuseppe a 1-year deal. Or sorry, a 1-way.
Yep.
Those guys left because they didn't get a 1-way in Vancouver. They lost a lot of guys in Abbotsford, mm-hmm. So I don't know what kind of team Manny's going to have next year, right?
A young one.
You know, he's got a hey, and you expect
signed some veterans yesterday.
Yeah, they did, Don. But you let some good guys go that just won you a Calder Cup. And here's another one. They're going to have a couple of guys graduate to Vancouver as well,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what that Abbey team looks like next year.
We're also going to miss Phil DiGiuseppe dominating training camp this year.
That's true.
Like the great training camp performer in Vancouver Canucks history across a 7-year span, always stood out. I mean, the Jets are going to have to work hard, I'll tell you that much, in September with Phil DiGiuseppe around, dominating camp.
All right, so looking ahead now, and we've heard already from Patrick Helvin on this station, Jim Rutherford out in Toronto radio on the Fan 590, and they've been pretty clear, like, yeah, we still really want to go and improve and get a center, but we might have to be a little patient. It might be the kind of thing where we go into the season and we're still looking. And it kind of reminded me last year, I think we all expected, okay, we don't love how the blue line looks with the departures of Ian Cole and Nikita Zadorov, but it'll be fine and they'll go and they'll fix that and they'll address it during the season. Now, eventually they go and get Marcus Pettersson, but obviously it was nowhere near as straightforward as I just laid it out. And I wonder if they're going to be able to do the same thing
or they're going to be able to kind of better execute on that plan this year and address a really key position during the season. What do you guys kind of expect to see shake out and play out here for the remainder of the summer going into training camp for the Canucks?
I don't know, but I'm sure we'll find out when Rutherford does his fourth or fifth straight interview with the Toronto
I gotta say,
radio
he was surprisingly buttoned up today, I thought. I saw a Jim Rutherford interview, I got really excited, and I was like, no real bombs there.
The president of the Vancouver Canucks has done four straight interviews in Toronto, but none in Vancouver. Listen.
What was the question again? I forgot.
What do you expect? What do you expect going forward here?
I will say this. The team you see on paper today is most likely the team you're going to see at camp, minus Seelovs, who, you know, they got a dump for a late-round pick in the summer sometime. But I'll tell you, they called Suter's agent yesterday, and they said, hey, look, keep us in mind. We got to move some money. But I do believe Suter will sign today or tomorrow. His market is still strong. They were kind of waiting on Ehlers. Ehlers is down to two teams. And he might be signing soon, but and Thomas, you reported this, and we talked about it on the show. Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger, like they've really soured on Joshua. I think I've heard his name out there for a while, and they've been shopping him. Like it was only 12 months ago, guys, that they signed this guy and gave him a huge raise, right? But begrudgingly, they went to a number with Joshua they didn't want to go to. But he had hip issues down the second half, lingering hip issues. I don't know where those hip issues are today. I don't know what he's going to be for training camp. But I'm just telling you guys, like, it sure seems like they've soured on Dakota Joshua.
I'll answer it a different way here as far as what to expect. If they can't improve offensively, if they can't get somebody to slot into the top six, somebody who can actually produce – all due respect to everybody. But I'm going to go back here a bit. Do you guys remember 06-07, that season, when the strength of their team, and they just acquired Roberto Luongo, who went on to become a Vezina finalist and a Hart Trophy finalist, and Alain Vigneault won the Adams Award as Coach of the Year. That team was strong in goal with Luongo, like they are right now, as long as Thatcher Demko remains healthy, or is healthy. And their defense, they acquired Willie Mitchell, I believe, as a free agent. They had Olin, they had Salo, they had Bieksa. And that team, I think only four teams allowed fewer goals than the Canucks. They had the best PK in the league. And I wonder if we're going to see something. I don't know what structure Adam Foote wants, but I wonder if we're going to see something like that this year. I know it's not sexy hockey, but it was winning hockey back then. That was a really good year. They finished with over 100 points. They finished in first place in the old Northwest Division. Remember that? Do we see something like that this time around? It's not the type of hockey that we see a lot of these days, but it might be what they have to do in order to survive, in order to pile up some points like they did back in 06 or 07. Just a thought, because I just look at how strong that defense is right now, how strong the goaltending should be, and how probably not so strong the offense will be. And I wonder if we're going to see something like that. That was the year they beat Dallas in the first round, the quadruple overtime game and the toilet game in Anaheim.
Wasn't it also the Braubarian season?
I believe it was, yes.
I think it was, yes.
Yeah, it was.
Jeff Cowan.
Really quickly, gentlemen, a couple things I expect here on Pew Suter. You know, club loves the player, loves the person, but I just don't think they can get to the price where he's likely to sign in the next 24 to 48 hours, as per you, Rick. You know, I think if things fall through and the market price changes, Canucks would obviously love to have him back. And I think that's generally the market they're going to be in. We're not going to see, I don't think, them be in on Roslovic or Nyquist or Olofsson or that sort of tier of guys in the market that those guys are looking to still hit in. But, you know, some guy's going to fall through the cracks, and we know that this club loves their late summer free agent bargains. So watch for that. They're obviously going to be. And then, you know, this P.O. Joseph signing today, gentlemen, I'm telling you, this club wants to give Volander and Elias Pettersson every opportunity to make the team. They're going to have the inside track to start day one. So P.O. Joseph, a depth signing, he's got an uphill climb if he's going to break camp with the team. And likewise, Atu Ratu, right?
forget an inside track. He's got a job to lose in the top nine if the Canucks don't add another center here. We'll see how his injury recovery proceeds. Obviously, only a couple months till camp opens, and he was hurt during the Calder Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
Missed the tail end of it. I don't think he's 100% just yet. So we'll see if he's able to have the sort of good summer, keep working on that skating, to come into camp and do what he did just this past season, which it's easy to forget, but he actually made this team out of training camp,
yep,
shockingly, to begin this season, then played 33 games, 7 goals. Like, he played pretty well at both levels. So a lot of hope internally for Atu Ratu, who's got a job basically to lose. That's some of what I'm hearing about sort of where the Canucks are positioned and how they're looking at their team. Now that the dust has settled after July 1.
The other thing, interesting thing, I think, from free agency yesterday, and, you know, we're making the point, hey, the Canucks signed guys that wanted to stay. That was a pretty common theme around the league.
Yes, it was.
Like, not a lot of high-profile movement.
Yeah.
And
everywhere. Florida.
Everywhere. They all stay, right? But even you look at the Western Conference and the Pacific Division, so obviously the Knights get Marner. That's a big deal. But can you point to another team in the division and say, like, wow, they really got better today? I don't think LA did. I don't think Edmonton did. Calgary didn't.
Not Edmonton.
You know, from a Canucks, I think if you're a Canucks fan, and I get the frustration, they're like, hey, they're just treading water. That's fair. So are the other six teams in the division, or six out of the other teams in the division, more or less.
Anaheim got Granlund.
They got Granlund.
That's the one.
Yeah, I was just going to say Anaheim got better. Yeah,
that's the one team. You know, but yeah, I mean, the Kraken signed Lindgren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of iffy defensive contracts handed out in the division, making the Marcus Pettersson proactive signing look even better for the Canucks, right? It's a good point. It does feel wide open. And, you know, in terms of, like, framing the Quinn Hughes conversation that we'll be having across the next few months, I think the extent to which no players wanted to move their stuff should be prominently noted. We need to prominently note that whenever we're discussing Quinn Hughes's future for the next 12 months or so. I think that's a new rule that I'm going to insist
on. Only Mitch Marner, who was apparently, like, scouting Vegas real estate at the Four Nations.
Only Mitch Marner, who had a deep-seated public divorce with the city that he played in, and Nikolai Ehlers, who could never get on the top line or on the top power play unit. You know, for the most part.
All right, fellas, this is awesome as always. Thank you for doing this all year.
Yeah, you
guys
killed
it. This is our
last
one. It's a blast. We look forward to it every Wednesday. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it's always a blast having you guys on. And is this your last show today, or are you guys going right till Friday?
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah,
tomorrow's our last show.
Well, enjoy the summer, and we always like to leave an air of mystery around whether we'll be back doing the show. So we'll do the same for you guys and say, hopefully, we can keep on doing it in the fall.
Hey, it is broadcasting, right?
Yeah,
so you
exactly.
never know.
You never know.
There is that. We've said goodbye before in other locations.
Yeah.
That's
and
true.
Never came back.
Yeah. Are you saying that broadcasting
is
something
so
unpredictable?
Oh yeah.
Not in a good state. Not in a good state.
You're asking us.
All right. You know. Before this gets too depressing, let's sign off on a high note here, fellas. All right. Thank you for doing this. Have an amazing
guys.
Summer.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. You can check it out. They join us every Wednesday for the crossover. I don't think he got the Green Day lyric reference there.
No, I don't think so either. That's okay. Hey. You know,
I probably hasn't listened to the song too many times
I'm a volume shooter. I don't always hit, but I keep shooting.
You're like the what was the
Mikhail Samuelson?
No, I was thinking in basketball.
Brandon Jennings.
No,
Allen Iverson.
He's the one about, like, he'd rather go 0-for-30 than 0-for-5, because, like, if you go 0-for-5, it means you stop shooting. But if you go 0-for-30, it means you, like, at least
is that Jamal Crawford?
No, it's not. I'll figure it out.
Are you sure it's not Jamal Crawford?
It's not Jamal Crawford. He played for the Heat. Dom, do you know who I'm
Dion
talking about?
Dion Waiters.
Dion Waiters. Of course. Dion Waiters.
Wow.
One of the great chuckers of all time.
I don't know. Like, Dion Waiters saying that is not nearly as cool as Jamal Crawford.
Well, Jamal Crawford was good.
Jamal Crawford
Dion
was
Waiters,
nasty.
Not so much. Not so much. All right. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into.
I like that his last name, though, now matches his job.
Wow. Shots fired at Dion Waiters. All right. We'll take a break here. Keep sending your texts in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. All right. It is Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. It's the biggest rivalry party of the year. Lions versus Rough Riders Saturday, July 19th at 4 p.m. with the Watermelon Smash on Terry Fox Plaza. Get tickets at bclions.com. So before we started the show today, I was sitting in the prep room thinking about some of the things we should run through. And one of them on my list was the bargain bin free agent watch for the Canucks, and specific names, but the types of players also, right? The roles, the needs on the roster that they would look to fill at the low end. And number one was veteran 7/8 type defenseman. You know, Jan Ruda was out there, and it turned out it was Pierre-Olivier Joseph that they signed. So that's one off the board. And as you're reporting on the show today, that like they are very intent on leaving a path open for DPD and Tom Volander both to make this roster.
Oh, I would say you can put it more firmly than that.
Sure.
Like, those guys have an inside track. This team is likely to start the season with two rookie defenders in the lineup. They are hopeful.
Wow.
That will happen. There's obviously a chance that it doesn't, that for whatever reason, injury or a poor summer or whatever, that they don't. But the way that this team is built, designed, they for sure want both Volander and Elias Pettersson in the opening night lineup.
All right. With that in mind, it would be surprising if they add more NHL experienced defensemen to the roster, right? Because you already have Forbort. Like, for that to happen, Forbort's in the press box. Because you've got Hughes, Hronek, Marcus Pettersson, Tyler Myers. That's your top four.
Yeah.
So you already...
Well, I would say not necessarily. Like, I think you could see Volander, Hughes. I think you could see Hronek,
sorry,
Elias
Pettersson.
Sure,
but like Pettersson. Four locks to be in the lineup.
Yeah.
Maybe not paired together, but
sure.
Like, they are going to be in the opening night lineup. So already, to get both of those guys in the lineup opening night, you're pushing a really accomplished, valuable defenseman and veteran defenseman Derek Forbort to the press box. So it would be surprising to add another roadblock,
yes,
potentially for them at this point, if you're kind of banking on those guys being ready to take that step.
But you always need depth. This team, yep, regularly uses 10 or 11 defensemen, right? And so I wouldn't be shocked by like a PTO guy. I wouldn't be shocked,
yes,
by another vet minimum guy, to be totally honest with you. You need depth in the American League. Christian Molanin has not been re-signed yet. Obviously, Cole McWard wasn't tendered a qualifying offer. He left. Akito Hirose wasn't tendered a qualifying offer. I mean, there's still needs for depth defenders. But you've also got like Sawyer Mineo, right? Like that's part of this, right?
Well, you like to manage playing time at the AHL level.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and there's guys like, you know, Ty Mueller. I don't know. Did you watch the full Todd Harvey availability?
I got to be honest, I did not.
Fair enough, because Todd Harvey post draft was like stunting about the
coaching baseball.
He was like stunting about the Ty Mueller pick. He's like, oh, you guys didn't like the Ty Mueller pick either. And it's like, yeah, jury's still out, man. I don't know. Like, it's nice, but point is that's more reflective than anything of how high the organization is on him.
Is on him, yeah.
Right, and Max Sasson, right? Like, those guys are going to be in with a shot. I think there's a sense that Ty Mueller, who's still a little bit undersized, might need another year of seasoning. I think Max Sasson can push for a roster spot at training camp. I think Max Sasson's development's partly why this club may, if the cap need requires it, part ways with Teddy Bluger if it came to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's all sorts of outcomes here. But yeah, I mean, this club's going to have a young American League team by design.
And so, okay, we'll see about the extra depth defenseman. Is there another kind of obvious spot on the roster where you would expect them to target in the bargain bin later on in the summer? I mean, center's the obvious.
Center. I mean,
the
center,
obvious category. But
center's the priority.
There's so little out there, though.
Correct.
To even be, like, moderately interesting. Like, this is a far cry from the Pugh Suter year when that felt like a really obvious candidate. Like, hey, some team should go get this guy to help their center depth. I don't know who's the player out there that fits that description right now. I don't know if there is one.
Yeah, I mean, it is tough to come up with good free agents, and that was before they all signed.
you know, we'll first of all, I think we're going to have a better sense of who exactly is falling through the cracks based off of
probably in the next 24 hours here.
Less. And now, you know, a lot of there's a lot of sense in the industry that some of these deals are being held up by Nikolaj Ehlers making his decision. But there's also, you know, at least within the industry, a pretty firm expectation that Carolina is going to emerge with, mm-hmm. with the player. I don't have any inside information. That's just what other teams think. So we'll see, you know, we'll see exactly where that goes. But, you know, so maybe to some extent, the idea of like dominoes falling after Ehlers makes his decision is like rote.
Especially because it seems to be only two teams in the mix,
right?
Really.
So the other guys,
I mean? So it's like if you're not Washington or Carolina, or you're a free agent who's not really speaking to Washington or Carolina, like why is that such a significant domino for you?
Right.
You know what I mean?
So in terms of centerman, though, right? I mean, yeah, it's thin. You've got some guys though, like Brock McGinn's, a guy who Rutherford had in Pittsburgh, right? He's probably more left wing. He's more of in that center capable bucket.
Right.
He's dealt with injuries the last two seasons. He's 31. Right. If that guy falls through the cracks and you're talking about a $1 million deal.
Yeah. I mean, he would have had him in Carolina and Pittsburgh too.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's like Guelph Storm. So he played for, oh my God, I always want to call him Scott Walker. Scott Walker. So, you know, we know that there's close ties between the Storm and the Canucks historically. You know, that would be the sort of name I think worth keeping in mind. There's you know, some guys that I like that I'm not sure the Canucks would, like Robbie Fabry.
Right? Again, more winger, but maybe center capable.
Center capable, yeah. more than a center, but that's what we're talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
At this stage,
yeah.
That's very much what we're talking about. So, you know, I mean, I could see them, like if Victor Olofsson doesn't land, right? That would be the sort of winger that makes sense. How about Nikolai Kovalenko?
How about him?
That's a name.
That is sure a name, all right.
No, but he's like 24, right? Or 25. He didn't get tendered a qualifying offer. He's a natural centerman. You know, like probably nothing, but it's the sort of profile that you might have to roll the dice on. So my point being is that you can, if you squint, find some options you might be able to talk yourself into.
There you go. That's what it's all about.
Sorry, and more than that, find some options that are actually worth rolling the dice on. I'll give you some names of guys who I honestly think are good and worth trying to sign. Hudson Fashing from the New York Islanders. Pure fourth liner.
Sure.
But like 6'2" with a huge reach and a really good skater. Go back and watch the tape of that Islanders game that the Canucks lost after that New York Rangers loss. Remember when they dominated the Rangers and
yep.
then lost?
Yep.
And then they lost to the Islanders and like Kevin Lankinen didn't have a great game and we kind of knew at that point that he was battling something. Remember?
Yep.
Hudson Fashing's work on Quinn Hughes in that game, like cutting away the top. If you can check Quinn Hughes, legitimately stay with Quinn Hughes as he's dancing around at the blue line, I'm interested.
Sure.
I'm interested. Like I see way too many elite NHL defensemen look completely silly in that position. So if you're doing a job where I can tell that Quinn Hughes, like at least hears a little bit of footsteps or at least can't get everything he wants.
Yeah.
Isn't completely manipulating you at will. I'm in.
There you go.
So Hudson Fashing is a winger worth considering. He can stay with Quinn Hughes a little bit
there. I do think for them to dip into the winger market though, it would have to be a pretty enticing profile, right? Because they are deep on the wings, and even, you know,
they are until,
sure, but you know, like we mentioned on the crossovers, like, oh, a lot of guys are going to be graduating from Abbey to the Canucks. It's like, but are they? There's not that much room right now, and a lot of the key players down there are wingers.
Okay,
you think of Lekkomäki, Baines, Carlson, right? Like,
so yeah,
you're
not wrong, because by the time we get to like Hoglander, Sherwood, we're talking about the third line wingers.
Yeah,
and so then by the time you get to
Joshua O'Connor, it's like your bottom six wingers right now are Hoglander, Sherwood, Joshua O'Connor.
Yeah.
So there's, now we're hearing maybe there's not even just that Joshua's available, but maybe there's some like proactive desire to move him, that there's Rick used the word souring on Joshua. So that could open up a spot, but even that's one spot.
Mm.
And if you do want to create an opportunity for those young players, or at least leave the room open. I mean, you don't have a lot of room to add legitimate, clear-cut, obviously on the roster NHL guys to the winger mix right now.
No, you don't.
You need depth always, but like you always. Got you. But in terms of where it falls on your pecking order, it's going to be, I would think, a less of a priority.
Yeah. No, and that's fair. That's fair, and that's true, and that's right. So I just think the overall thing is they're going to dumpster dive, I think, more than they are likely to, like,
yeah,
you know, sign Pugh Suter or Jack Roslovic to a 4x4 contract following the Ehlers signing this afternoon. I'm not looking for that to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's your read on the Dakota Joshua situation? Are you hearing the same things that Rick is, that maybe it goes beyond, like, oh, he's available if we want to open cap space? Or because it's a little surprising to me, given the circumstances he was dealing with this year.
I think if you're willing to deal a guy in order to open cap space, you're already...
Sure.
That's already telling.
Yeah.
You know, like what I always say about, well, this team's going to have to trade William Karlsson. It's like, no, they're not.
Yeah.
They're absolutely not going to trade one of the guys they don't want to trade. They're going to exhaust all other options before they trade the pieces they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's how teams function. So at the moment that you're looking at guys and being like, okay, well, you know, we can save some money here, I think that speaks volumes about whether, like, you know, and souring, I don't know. I haven't heard souring.
Sure, okay.
I would say that's probably a little more aggressive than what I've heard, but viewed as replaceable, I think is a fair inference from, yeah, that's a piece we're willing to move.
Well, and as we just laid it out here, right? I mean, you brought in Drew O'Connor, and that brings some similar element of the size and the forechecking ability. We heard they were talking, potentially had early discussions on an extension with Kiefer Sherwood in a bottom six role. And then, as I said, you know, everyone's high on the Abbotsford Canucks class moving up. But again, like outside of Sasson, most of those guys are wingers.
Yeah, you know, though, also, right, time flies. Life moves fast, right? There was a time, not very long ago even, where this organization could have said to have soured on Connor Garland, who changed agents to help facilitate a trade out of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, whether or not that's entirely true, he sort of thought that was a twisting of the situation now that I remember talking to him about it. But nonetheless, like, was on the trade block for multiple years, changed agents, looked for all the world to be available. Every team in the league knew that Connor Garland was available.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday he signed for 6x6, having completely flipped the script on what he means to this franchise. Brock Besser, who got to the market, was likewise soured on and on the block and speculated about for years when this front office first took over. Remember, people used to laugh at me for saying that Garland and Besser were better than Andrei Kuzmenko.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, such a ridiculous opinion, people thought, that they laughed about it. They all laughed at me.
They all laughed at you.
Mostly John Shorthouse. And, you know, so, but yesterday Brock Besser signed for 7.35 over 7 years, and the market, like, was jubilant, as excited as they've been about a piece of Canucks news in a long, long time. So, yeah, I mean, things can change in a hurry. Joshua had that incredible shooting percentage-driven goal-scoring season, shot 21%. Last year, he shot 13.5%. He also dealt with a lengthy rehab following surgery to deal with a testicular cancer diagnosis that kept him off the ice for a long time. And right when he was finding his form in early January, he got hurt again. And I don't know that he ever caught up, to be totally honest with you. I just think he was always behind on the hamster wheel. I still think he's a good player. I still think he's, like, a really impactful forechecker. I think he's a pretty good penalty killer. He can take draws. I mean, you want to talk about center-capable guys who we've never actually seen do it?
Yep.
I think Dakota Joshua is, at the very least, a guy who, if you put him on the ice with, you know, like, another center-capable guy who's not really one, like a Brock McGinn or a Anthony Beauvillier even, could, like, help take draws and then go back to the wall. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of weird ways that you could use him if you wanted to. And I like his hands in tight. I think he's got pretty good hands. You know, I as much as he was probably fortunate to be scoring at a 25 goal pace, and there was some finishing luck involved in that PDO bender season that, you know, got a lot of Canucks paid, not just him. I don't think we should ignore the fact that he's got real touch. Right, like, I don't think it's outrageous for him to be a 15-goal guy who brings some unique physical elements and is a good penalty killer for you. And if he can do all that and keep his motor running without it having to be jump started by, you know, teammates and coach the coaching staff, he's well worth his deal. So I would look at Joshua as a candidate to bounce back more than anything else, a candidate that, you know, if you can make the money work without dealing Joshua, I think that should be your preference. Yes. In my view, especially because, look, you can't keep making errors at the margins and then paying to get off of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like at some point, a million here for Mikheyev, right? A pick sent out here for, you know, Dickinson or I don't know, whomever, right? Like how many times have we seen this front office either pay to get off of the previous front office's mistakes or pay to fix their own quickly? And people are like, well, I like that about this front office. They're always quick to admit their mistakes and fix them. And that's a totally fair statement. But the cost of always having to do it adds up over time.
And I think the timing makes a big difference here, right? Because there are moments where there's a legitimate sense of urgency and you have to do what's necessary to move on from mistakes because it allows you to chase other opportunities.
Right.
I don't think we're there with Dakota Joshua. Maybe something comes up, an opportunity they're not expecting comes up, and okay, hey, we got to do what we got to do and we got to move Joshua so that we can pursue this. But otherwise, considering the course they've already charted here at the beginning of free agency, I'd rather see them hold and see if he can rebuild some of his value. Then you can, like, how often have we talked about this, right? Just getting off of the cycle of buying high and selling low. And that's this Dakota Joshua, if they move him, would be another example. They bought high, gave him the contract, then you'd be selling low now. So even if you want, even if you think he's replaceable and you have soured on the player, maybe give him a chance to rebuild some of that value. So you're at least like buying high and selling middle instead of selling low. Because it's just such a common cycle that we've seen so often here.
Yeah. But, you know, I would say that my understanding of this has always been more on the side of if the right move for a center becomes available, as opposed to Dakota Joshua goes out for a mid-round pick because we need the cap space, but we don't have something already worked out for it.
Yeah. All right. Jason Bukla, our pal, joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Are you sure it's not Jamal Crawford?
It's not Jamal Crawford. He played for the Heat. Dom, do you know who I'm
talking about?
Dion Waiters. That sounded like in Family Feud, where they turn over the last answer.
Yeah.
Waiters! Waiters!
All right, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting
live. We're doing the feud.
We are. Man, what a great show. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio.
Great.
That's great show. Are you kidding? It's in the homesick from school Hall of Fame with the Price is Right. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. I'm more of a Jeopardy guy.
Well, sure. La-di-da. Hoity-toity guy over here.
Hey, who serves your food at a restaurant?
Waiters! It's like Family Feud category. Jobs at a restaurant. Waiters! All right, we're broadcasting live.
That is surprisingly funny. I gotta give it to you, Dom. Good drop.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. We'll get Jason Bukla on the line here momentarily. Fortunately for Books, he did not have to listen to that frivolity before he joined the show, but always curious to get Books' thoughts about what the Canucks have done and what we saw around the league yesterday as well. You know, we touched on this just briefly with Donnie and Dolly, but it really just seems like stasis was one of the themes in the NHL yesterday. A lot of guys staying put. Hard to find, like, clear-cut, wow, this team really did well. I'm not saying there's none, but, like, in terms of, like, transformational free agency periods, it feels slimmer.
Florida.
keeping
but
their guys.
But even then, it's retention.
I know, but
it's retention. So it's like, it's you're right, but
it's a
different
huge
category.
Departure.
Yeah.
Like the world where, oh man, this Stanley Cup championship team just gets to
and
keep everyone together.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
is new.
All right. Now joining us on the Power West hotline from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL.
Fresh off a 5-hour broadcast on day two
Absolutely.
Of the draft.
There you go. He is our guy, Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas? I survived LA is what's going on. I'm ready.
Easily or I mean, that second when it goes remote and you're up there for 5-6 hours, Books, it's a feat of stamina. You absolutely crushed it. I want to make sure I say that in front of our listeners. I was very impressed. You absolutely nailed it, brother.
I appreciate your support. It wasn't ideal, obviously, the length of it this year. The first round was what it was, and the kids were mostly in the building, which was great because it is their day. Obviously, it's the biggest day of their life so far. And yeah, day two was a little bit of a grind with a lot of moving parts, but happy to do it. And like I said, it really has nothing to do with me whatsoever. You try your best to make sure that you know as many of the players as intimately as possible, and make sure that you can give them their 30 seconds of just do when it's such a big day for them.
And, you know, Books, before we turn our attention to free agency and what the Canucks did, I mean, I want to ask you about their draft class. They take Braden Coutts in the first round. You know, somewhat surprisingly, they still had that pick at 15. We'd heard them connected to Coutts. What did you think of that pick and the draft class as a whole for the Canucks?
Well, I'm a huge Coots fan. I think that in previous draft classes, first of all, when you're picking in the muddy middle of the draft at 15, and it's not like there weren't some really good players still available on the board, but when you're picking in the muddy middle like this, you're always going to be in a tough spot as a staff and open yourself up for some criticism, because I do believe that the need factor starts to creep in a little bit more than just the best player. And for me personally, Coots is a future captain type material. I love this kid's character. He absolutely works his you-know-what off every time he rolls over the boards. Better than secondary scoring upside, can play center in the wing, can play in all situations. He's a captain at the junior level, captain of Team Canada. And he went off at the U18s this year, guys. He had 2 points a game on average there to show what he can really do against his own age group. So I think there's more offense on the horizon. But more importantly, that glue guy, that guy that you know that every day, he's never going to have to be coached up. And I really appreciate him as a player and as a personality. I love the pick. I'm really excited that he's going to be playing there in Vancouver someday.
It felt to me, Books, talking globally about the draft itself, it felt to me like with the Panthers winning on this, you know, size, intensity, passion, competitiveness model, that a lot of shots were taken on bigger bodied athletes who, you know, may not have been like very functional or high level players in their leagues relative to what we've seen in previous years. Smaller defensemen were out. Smaller players got pushed down the board despite having gaudy scoring profiles. And one of the reasons I like the Canucks draft class, to be totally honest with you, is it felt like they eschewed that. They really did pick guys who were functional throughout the order.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair observation on your part. The size of this draft class and how they were slotted, how teams valued the players, they certainly, on my list personally, a lot of the smaller players and even smaller puck-moving defensemen, they went, you know, they were overtaken by exactly what you just described, bigger players. And the Canucks, they did some pretty crafty work. I mean, the Durbin kid who started the year at St. Mm-hmm. Andrews and ended up in Kingston, he's interesting to me, guys. He's super skilled. He's gonna need some time, but I like what he does with the puck on his stick. He's a playmaker. I like his vision a lot. I actually think, too, that Wilson Bjork, although he hasn't really popped so much on the international stage, like his J20 numbers in Sweden were excellent. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's a little bit on the light side, and he's going to need some time to fill out a little bit more. But I think that he plays the game the right way and has that offensive sort of pedigree embedded in there as well. So yeah, they did different kind of work. The Canucks did, and of course drafting Medvedev in the second round, what was the 47th overall from the London Knights. That's a crafty pick. So the Todd Harvey and his staff would have had to do a lot of their homework in the regular season on Medvedev, because he didn't get a sniff in playoffs for the Memorial Cup champion London Knights. But that's not because he wasn't good enough. It's just that he was the backup. And I really like that at his stature, he's like 6'2", 180. He's got great crease composure, fellas. So he never loses his size advantage between the posts. He's not swimming around, getting outside the blue paint to have to retreat back to the middle of the net. Like, big bodies are fine to have, but when they get too sloppy, they have to track back to take the net away again, and it doesn't work that way. Medvedev's not like that. He's got great crease composure, and that's an interesting pick, isn't it? Because eventually, you know, when he arrives, Lankinen will be, on the back nine of his extension, and it's going to be curious to see what happens with Shelov's here coming up. Medvedev's going to be in the OHL for another couple of years. He's got time on his side.
Yeah, it was interesting already. I heard Jim Rutherford on 590 out in Toronto reference not just Ty Young in the pipeline, but the new pick Medvedev, as well as saying, you know, those are two guys they're very, very high on. Obviously taking him in the second round shows us that as well. So
just really quick, for the first time calling around and asking a variety of my team sources today, Books, about what the Canucks are going to do at center, which, as you can imagine, I woke up on July 2nd and I was like, what are the Canucks going to do at center? What are they going to do? That was my prime focus this morning. So I was making some calls, working the phones, doing basically annoying everybody as I do. And it was the first time that I heard somebody express at least some interest in seeing exactly what Coots might look like at training camp. Is there any chance, in your view, given the size, given sort of the development path here, that he could, you know, not like be a full-time NHL player in his D+1, but come to camp and stick around late and put on a push in preseason and at least put Adam Foote and company in a position where they're making a tough decision about whether or not to see him play 10 games?
Absolutely. Absolutely can see that. Like, that's just part of his DNA. I think that's what you guys are going to appreciate most. He's always going to be pushing the organization to make a hard decision as to what they want to do with him sooner maybe than later. And that's a good problem to have. And I appreciate that about him. He's just wired that way. I'm positive. Without even seeing him at development camp, I'd be very confident in saying, I bet you he's already taken on a leadership role amongst that group. It's just the way he is. And yeah, he'll give them pause. He'll give them something to think about. Is it going to be the right decision to make? I don't know. Time will tell. I'd say that the good thing about him is that he's not an A game only guy. He's got that B game, and when he's not scoring, he does all those other things very, very well: checking, getting in the grill of the opponents, being on the right side of the play. So he's trustworthy that way, and I think that's why he'll get a long look at training camp. And yeah, why not? We'll see how it goes.
Moving to the Canucks moves and unrestricted free agency, Books, I'm torn on this because I think it makes sense with the cap going up to lock up your good players as quickly as you can. First chance you get, lock them up long term. That's something that makes a lot of sense to me. I like that approach. I think the Besser contract's perfectly fine, perfectly fair. I think he was probably the best option available to them, and it would have been worse to lose him for nothing, without question, than to get that deal done. I like the Garland deal. The Demko one makes me nervous, but I certainly understand the case for doing it, on and on. All of that said, I'm struggling to square all those things that I think are true or fair with doubling down and running it back with a 90-point team that has missed the playoffs 4 of the last 5 years. Talk me off the ledge.
Yeah, that's going to be difficult to do, to be honest. I feel a lot the same way that you do. There's a big part of me here that so Suter's a year older than Besser. Besser does what he does offensively, and he's a great teammate, valued in the room, et cetera, et cetera. I get all that. So the number doesn't not make sense at 7.25 for what he can do offensively. For me, from a team building perspective, I was a little bit I'm still uneasy about not having Suter back, given the fact that when things went off the rails this year, he really was the best version of himself, and it spoke to his character. And I'm not so much going to say his trajectory, because he might have overshot his actual, but I think that maybe even a shade below that was going to present really good value with the way he plays the game. So, you know, they don't have a keeper Sherwood that I see coming in right now that would really make me feel even a little bit better about the situation. But, you know, Joshua is going to come to camp healthy, I hope, and, you know, get right away, you know, be better, obviously, because last year he had to chase the season for personal reasons and health. Hedl's still a huge question mark, guys. Like, we talk about Demko and the question mark there about that signing, and boy, oh boy, Vezina, quality goalie when he's healthy and he's on it. I get it. Hedl is still one hit away for me from, and I hope it doesn't happen to him, because I really want this kid to, you know, be healthy and be a really good player. But there's a lot of question marks still for me, is my long, long answer here. I don't feel super great about it. Time will tell, because we haven't even got the Pettersson year, and I think a lot of it's going to be predicated on just how great his summer is and how he comes to training camp to set a new tone.
Yeah, it's fascinating to look at their depth chart down the middle, Books, and you know, you mentioned Pettersson at the top, and we know the upside there, but we also saw the downside last season. Hedl, it's the health risk, which is serious, but also, I mean, even when healthy, you know, not sure if he profiles as a clear-cut number two center. And then it sounds like Atu Ratu might have a real chance to be the third-line center for this team coming out of training camp. And again, some interesting upside there, but also a lot of risk, a big role for a relatively young and inexperienced player. It's just pretty striking to see an NHL team. You know, it's one thing to be placing one of those bets on your top three centers, right? But to be kind of placing all of them at once, I can see the vision if everything goes right, but man, there's a lot of risk down the middle as well.
Oh, is there ever? Like, where's the scoring going to come from, right? Because Hedl's not a true two. You know, he's a three, and he's better as a three. You're going to get more offense out of him, believe it or not, as a three. Everybody says, well, top six, but there's certain players in the league that require a certain type of matchup to thrive, and him in the two, he's not going to go off offensively in the two. If he had more protection from somebody else in the two, then he'd be better off in the three, and you'll get more offense from him. So, yeah, I think that you really have a top-line centerman who's coming back with some question marks around, you know, he's got to prove it, right? But we know what he is when he's at his best. But, boy, oh, boy, that's in the rear-view window a long time ago. So there's a question mark. And then it falls right off to bottom six guys. There's a glaring hole there. And everything still has to go perfect. Just like you said, Jay, everything has to be perfect just to be hopeful, right? So, yeah, we'll see how this goes. I mean, Linus Karlsson had a really good playoff in Abbotsford, right? He did some really good things down there. Ratu, obviously. And those guys have now won a championship and learned a little bit about those high-leverage situations at the pro level in North America and what it takes. And there'll be a hangover from that that's a positive one. I guess the good news on the back end is that I do like the D. I think there's good structure there. And the goaltending on balance should be hopefully their strongest, maybe arguably the strongest position on the entire roster, like on a nightly basis, the most consistent possibly. So is it good enough though, guys? I'm not going to sit here and say they're winning the off season quite yet. There's still so much to answer, and we won't know until training camp.
Books, as we think about what the Canucks lineup could look like, you know, and always a fun exercise. So if you'll just indulge me, hockey tactics question.
Yeah.
If Pettersson bounces back, okay, assuming Pettersson bounces back, do you play him with Quinn Hughes as a five-man unit at the top of the lineup so that you at least are sort of making hay and putting up goals in a certain segment, let's say 18 minutes, 5-on-5 a night? Or do you use him to shelter the other non-Hughes minutes, given that those minutes have been an adventure, a train wreck for the Canucks in recent years? Just to try and give yourself a fighting chance of actually manufacturing offense when Quinn Hughes takes a breather.
I think it's a great suggestion, and I'm all in on that. So you have to be able to create enough of a distraction, especially on home ice. You lose a little bit of control on the road. But you know what? Teams don't they don't match up as much as they used to. Like in regular season, I don't find that teams are always matching up quite the way they used to. Just the way the game's played today. Obviously, playoffs, it becomes a little bit different, more calculated, I guess. But, yeah, I like that a lot. Let's have the best players available on the ice one-third of the time, basically, together to create as much chaos as possible. And, you know, with that, let's just assume that your opponent has to roll out maybe two lines to try and contain that. Definitely two sets of defense pairs. It won't be the same pair every night or every shift. Now you're hoping that when they're on their game that they can wear down that group of, call it, 10 players on the opposition, or take a bite out of them at least, so that it opens up more space for the rest of the group. And I like that strategy a lot. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. You know, Evander Kane will factor into this as well, because, you know, depending on how whatever that line, like if you end up playing Kane and Sherwood on the same line together for some reason, like those guys should beat the tar out of the opponent when they're on, right? It's not going to be any fun. So that'll open up some space too for whoever plays the middle on that line. And yeah, this is a fun exercise, but I like that strategy. Why not? Like, make yourself as hard to track as possible.
Around the league, Books, I mean, we were talking just before we got you on, it's hard to see anyone other than Florida as the winner of free agency, given that they were able to keep all of their big UFAs.
Vegas.
Sure. Okay.
Carolina.
Beyond the Panthers, who do you see as a winner over the last, you know, 24, 48 hours, and which team kind of leaves you scratching your head a little bit?
Well, you know, Vegas did well to get Marner and add that second layer, because after Eichel, and, you know, Stone has struggled with health, but when he's on, he's on. He's great. But he's not a burner. He's calculating, and he does it a great way. Fantastic hockey IQ. But it really falls off in Vegas in terms of their scoring up front after Eichel, so that's a big one for them. Carolina did some really good things. I think I heard your answer just kind of pipe up there. They did. They absolutely did. Keandre Miller... that's interesting to me. You know, I'm kind of buyer beware on him, but he's a big rig, he skates, and it feels like in Carolina, it's going to be a good fit for him, the way that Rod Brindamore, coaches that team.
Heck yeah.
The New York Rangers, I was shocked. I don't know how you guys feel about this. I was shocked after they signed Gavrikov and I looked at how much money they had left, that Cooley signed for what he signed for. I honestly thought he was going to get offer-sheeted by somebody, because his numbers, fellas, they almost mirror Matthew Nye's numbers, and he had 300 hits last year, Will Cooley. Now, it's a two-year deal as opposed to Nye's deal where it buys up some free agency, but at the same token, it's affordable for the Rangers right now to fit. So that just tells me how comfortable he is there. But that was a fascinating bit of business, because I thought they were going to lose him. And so I guess I got to give the Rangers kudos for keeping him there.
That was my least favorite contract of the day, Books.
The Cooley, for him or for the team?
For the team. Cooley, yeah, for two times, 3.9?
Oh, 3.75.
3.75. I loathe that, because he's exactly the type of player, given the black and blue style, and given the fact that I agree with you, I've been dropping Cooley as just Matthew Nyes with worse line mates as a talking point for weeks. That's exactly the player that I need to lock up long term. Like, I want to pay for his 20s. Okay. I do not want to wait, and I don't want to be sweating signing him till he's 33. I want 7-8 years, and I'll pay the premium to do it. I think that kid's going to be heavy skill, top six, probably a star, and the Rangers will significantly regret having not bought his entire prime when they had the opportunity to do so.
Totally agree. I was splitting hairs in a different direction,
yeah.
Right? Because
they manage their risk, for sure.
It buys them time to make an adjustment if required, but certainly it opens up. Like, as soon as next year's over, Drancer, they get into his last year again, here you are, you're right back at it, aren't you? Like, you're right back at square one, and depending on where the Rangers are. And honestly, like, how unpredictable and unhinged were the New York Rangers this year? They were, you know, the three of us talked about Vancouver all year because that's what we do. But honestly, the people in New York must have been scratching their heads. There's a lot of weirdness going on there. So, yeah, you know, long term, I would have liked to have done it kind of like what we did to X back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, doing it that way where people are like, oh, 7-2-5 or whatever it was back in the day, that's too long, too much, until it wasn't. And, you know, that would have been better off for Cooley for sure. So I'm seeing it that way too. I just was surprised that they, I was surprised he didn't get offer-shooted to just be gone altogether. That was what surprised me.
Last one, Books. If Ehlers does what most people around the league that I've spoken with over the past 24 hours expect and signs in Carolina, you will have had the conference finalist in the West. You would have had Vegas add Marner. You would have had the other big pieces go, unrestricted free agent piece land in Carolina, another conference finalist or a conference finalist team. And then you would have had Florida not bleed a single star level piece in the wake of a Stanley Cup championship win. I read that and think to myself, how do you get out of the middle class now? How do you, if these great teams are going to have zero pressure on them to lose talent at all, how does anyone ever catch up? Is this something you're thinking about? Is this something that need to be monitoring, watching, devising strategies to figure out how to cope?
If your team, on so many different levels, we don't even have enough time for all the thoughts I have on this because you're bang on. Here's the thing. The salary cap, everybody talks about the salary cap going up and it's going to be beneficial for the entirety of the league. It's not, guys. It absolutely is not. So if you're a middle-of-the-road team right now, even if you're a cap team today, there's sooner than later for some of those franchises is going to be inherited internal caps. I firmly believe that. Not everybody's going to be able to be a cap team. So if you haven't locked up some of these players like in Ehlers or your core guys that have gone to these already really good teams, if you ever haven't been able to do that now and you're trending towards being an internal cap team later on, there's going to be some haves and some have-nots in this league. And yes, absolutely, it's going to be harder to chase down organizational success based on structure. So that is something that should have been talked. I'm sure it was in the back rooms, you know, in the war rooms in the last week or so. I'm sure that it's been addressed. I'm concerned for the Winnipeg Jets when it comes to that. This is a President's Trophy winning team who, if Ehlers walks, I'm not so sure where the Jets are going in the next few years with their own internal cap and how harder it gets to get another Nick Ehlers on the roster. So you're bang on.
Books, man, this is our last show of the year, so it's for the season, I should say. So it's your last hit with us, and honestly, thank you so much, man. We look forward to it every Wednesday. You're a blast to have on. We appreciate the time, and you've done the show from like Finland. You do your show at all hours. You step away from TV for us, so it means a lot to us, man.
MVP.
Listen, boys, you know I love you, and Lena, and everybody out there. I appreciate the listeners putting up with me every Wednesday, and I look forward to more in the future. So thank you.
Thank you. The listeners love it. Honestly, we get more texts saying, man, I love when you guys have Books on than we do about any other guests. So the listeners love it. We love it. Have a fantastic summer, man.
Thank you, guys. Same to you.
That
All
is
the best.
Jason Buchla from Sportsnet, Sportsnet's NHL coverage, and a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. Joins us every Wednesday. And yeah, absolute pleasure to have Books on the show all the time. All right. We got one final segment here left on the show. So we'll take a break. Send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We can look ahead maybe all the way to training camp and talk about what to expect for the rest of the summer for the Canucks as well. Next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Again, it's our last show doing a show together for the season. I'll be doing, I think we're going to call it Canucks Talk, if not Sportsnet Today, with Josh tomorrow. And I think you're with Josh on Friday.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's
so there
right.
are there is still versions of Canucks Talk coming, but the last one for the two of us this season. So send your text in 650-650. And I mean, what would it be without us?
A final segment.
Questioning the schedule. On air, figuring out the schedule on the fly.
Classic.
What's happening for the next couple of days? There we go. That's what's happening. I thought we could do something right up our alley for the final segment,
sure.
Or at least for part of it, which is take a way too early, premature look at line combinations.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
We haven't had line combinations to talk about for a while here. We'll go out with a bang. And again, because we have a pretty clear-cut group of 12 NHL forwards currently under contract for the Canucks right now. And there's still opportunities for, you know, somebody just texted in about Lekker-Mäki to crash that party. Sasson, Baines, Carlson. They could sign somebody else, right, that could figure into the mix. But we have a very clear-cut group of 12 under contract to the Canucks right now. And I think down the middle, we know pretty clear, at least in the top six, it's going to be Pettersson, Hedl. Do you want me to go do like my top six combinations first, and then you can do yours? How do you want to do this here? Should we try to build it collectively?
Wow, that's a tough one. You've stumped me. Why don't we just go through it? Let's go through it collectively and agree on a show.
We'll do a consensus group of line combos.
Let's start on the top line.
Okay. So who are we putting with Pettersson? The age-old question.
Elias Pettersson is clear.
I think it's got to be Besser.
So Besser, and then it's got to be someone with speed.
I would have DeBrusk. So mine would be DeBrusk, Pettersson, Besser.
Sure.
And I think I get the questions about 5-on-5 chemistry with Pettersson and Besser, but like, if you're signing the guy for 7 more years and you're keeping Pettersson in town,
they better find it.
They're your 2 highest paid forwards. Like, let's see if that can work.
Someone should wear the number 9 just to reunite the lotto line.
Get DeBrusk to switch to 9.
Yeah.
I think what's the opposite of like retiring a number? I think they might just take that one out of rotation for a little bit. I don't know. Do you think Pettersson wants to look over and see number 9 out there? I don't think so.
It's like when the Canucks had Jason Dickinson wearing 18, and it was like I hadn't seen a player wearing Canucks blue make responsible defensive plays in the number 18 in years. I was like, what's going on? This guy can handle a puck off the wall?
What the heck?
I think we can lock that in. Second line, Filip Hedl.
Yes.
With?
It's got to be, to me, Evander Kane.
Yep.
And Connor Garland. I think it has to be, right? You do the playmaking. Oh, this is easier than I thought it would be.
Now, I guess the only question is, would you rather have Evander Kane and Garland? Because I like the idea of Evander Kane as like souped up Dakota Joshua.
Yes.
Would you rather have them, since they're less likely, or they're more likely to be able to, like, Garland can drive, Kane can score. Mm-hmm. You put them with Atu Ratu, and you sort of insulate Atu Ratu a little bit more, and that becomes your third line. You can play Hedl with like,
so it'd be like Hoglander and
Drew O'Connor
or Joshua or Sherwood or something like that. Yeah. I could see that. And I mean,
is Joshua, assuming Joshua remains, is it Joshua with Ratu and Garland on a third line,
mm-hmm,
and it's Hedl with Evander Kane and Hoglander or Sherwood, one with whichever you prefer, at right wing on the second line?
I tend to lean to...
I've illustrated your options. You can make the
final
call.
Just put your 6 best guys in the top 6, and I think that means then it's Kane, Hedl, mm-hmm, Garland as your second line. I'm curious. Like, I agree with you about the thing with Ratu, and I touched on this just a little bit with Books, but like, we talk a lot about the risk with Pettersson and Hedl. There's a lot of risk with, hey, Ratu, you're a top 9 player for us as well. There's some upside there. We were all encouraged by what we saw from Ratu, and if it works out, that could look like a really smart move. But there's definitely you should definitely be mindful as you're putting the lines together. I think that idea of insulating him and setting him up to succeed. So I would go Evander Kane, Filip Hedl, Connor Garland on the second line. That left me when I was just doing the exercise in the break here on the third line, Ratu, and I had him with Hoglander and Sherwood. I don't know.
A little small. Yeah, I think that's a little small.
So got to bump Joshua up there?
I think Hoglander, Sherwood. I think Hoglander, Sherwood, Garland play on different lines. Just as like an instructive way of thinking about it.
Okay. So I will flip then. I think what I would do then, because it's going to feel tough if Hoglander is playing 4th line minutes again. And I get he struggled last year, but then he also came on strong from a production standpoint down the stretch. You're paying him. That contract kicks in now. At a certain point, the guy has got to break out of the like 11 minutes a night routine that he's been in for most of his NHL career. So I'm going to go with Hoglander, Ratu, and then I guess we'll move Drew O'Connor up to play on that line, and then we'll go Joshua, Bluger, Sherwood on the 4th line.
Joshua, Bluger,
Sherwood.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good 4th line.
That's a good 4th line.
Yeah.
Yeah. the other lines leave me wanting more a little bit, but I like that fourth line for sure.
I also like that fourth line. That's what we got. That's what we got to hang on to.
That's what it's all about. It does really just drive home to me doing the exercise. Like, these are high, high stakes bets down the middle. A high stakes bet that Elias Pettersson can be an elite top of the lineup player, like not just a good first line player, but an elite high level first line player. You're taking a bet on Filip Hedl. That's kind of always like, he was never able to do it in New York, step up and grab a consistent top six role. And it's not just the health. It's one thing to say, like, oh, his health is such a question, but it's like, no, it's the production when he's in, it's the performance when he's in the lineup as well.
And we saw it. I mean, he's so slick through the neutral zone, right? He's an exceptional puck carrier. He's a really good skater. He's a really big body. And then, having gained the line and entered with speed, there's no rush where he gets the edge on a defender. Mm-hmm. The pass does not connect. The shot misses wide. Right? And like, he just needs to figure out a way to convert more of the opportunities at opportunities that he gets into actual opportunities. And that was a limitation.
Yep.
That we saw before he got injured. And that's been a limitation that's defined a lot of his career. He's also had phenomenal stretches. Remember, he had that killer playoff run in 2021. So he can be a really good piece. I'm of two minds when I watch him play, because I watch him play and think, man, I don't know if he has it in the what they'd call in soccer the final third.
Yes.
But also, if you're generating that many raw opportunities at opportunities, eventually you're just going to connect on a bunch of them in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I am of two minds when it comes to Filip Hedl. But look, the Canucks need to upgrade at center. This is not a breaking news headline.
Nope.
This is something we know. This is something they know.
And they're not even trying to hide it. They're being very upfront.
Oh, yeah. They're
why would
on
you?
It. Yeah. And they're working on it. And they were working on it all summer, and they couldn't get it done, right? And it's a serious defect. I mean, here's my big, honest, like, big picture concern about this team is you roll into Seattle where they can pick the matchups, and they're coming at you with Wright, Beniers, and
Stevenson. Mm-hmm.
And we can talk all we want about Vancouver having an edge in net and us liking the defense. And we have the Canucks have Quinn Hughes, and they certainly don't. And that's all true. But Adam Foote's going to earn his money, man, trying to figure out how to protect those matchups and how to, you know, like, it's going to be tough. Like, Atu Ratu has improved his skating, but a head-to-head against Chandler Stevenson is still a mismatch. You know, mm-hmm. not to mention Shane Wright against Filip Hedl. And you go into Anaheim, and they're coming at you with Granlund and Leo Carlson and Mason McTavish, and guess what? You're at a disadvantage again. And I didn't pick the good teams. I didn't pick Danault, Kopitar, and who's their other center? Byfield.
Yep.
I didn't pick Eichel and
Carlson
and Hurdle. Oh, my goodness. Right? I didn't pick Dreisaitl and McDavid
mm-hmm.
and Henrique. Like, I picked the lower lights in the Pacific. And it's still a matchup issue for the Canucks down the middle. We have some Dhaliwal reporting that we should get into.
Yeah, Rick Dhaliwal tweeting just a few minutes ago, believe Pius Suter closing in on a team, not the Canucks. So seems pretty imminent here. What I know you were suggesting earlier in the show looked very likely, that the Canucks would not be willing to go to the number that Pius Suter is able to command on the open market. We wondered if maybe he wouldn't sign until we see where Nick Ehlers is going, but according to Rick Dhaliwal, and I would trust Dhaliwal to be all over this beat, sounds like Pius Suter is going to be off the market very soon, perhaps imminently here. Do you have a sense of, we haven't heard a ton of teams in connection with him. Like, we've heard Philly, but it's always just it's always been, there are lots of teams interested or who would be interested, but we've never gotten to these specifics.
I bet it's someone smart.
Sure.
You know, like, I think we're going to see it and you're going to be like, all right, that's a smart team.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
All right.
Because he's such an odd player. You really have to have an understanding of, like, the nuance of how Pius Suter helps you win.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He does a lot of the anonymous things that I think escape notice unless you're watching really closely.
He is maybe the least flashy player in the NHL.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, well, he's definitely the least flashy player in the NHL who's maintained a consistent top line goal scoring rate.
Yes. Yeah. For the salary he's about to command and for the value. Yeah. You know, just from the physical profile on down, right? Not big, not fast. Already, that's hard to carve out a consistent role in the NHL if you're checking both of those boxes.
Doesn't win draws, plays every position.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it's not like he, you know, and it's not like he's, like, Connor Garland is not big, but it's like, oh, man, he's a pest. He gets in guys' faces. Like, he drives them crazy. It's like, Pew Suter doesn't really
do that. Watch him choke up on that stick.
Yeah, like, Pew Suter doesn't really do that.
No.
You know, he doesn't have any, like, that one thing that you watch and, like, oh, there he is, classic Pew Suter.
I also have gotten more tips this summer about Pew Suter being seen in Vancouver that were wrong than I ever have with any other player ever. Ever. One of them was actually good, by the way, but the person who saw Pew Suter, or who thought they saw Pew Suter, actually saw Derek Forbert.
Wow, come on.
Yeah, so I had a tip on Derek Forbert in a suit at Rogers Arena, and someone thought it was Pew Suter, so I checked around and was like, are you guys close with Pew Suter? Are you guys? And I was, no, we're not. And then a few hours later, Derek Forbert signed. And I got another text from the person who'd given me that tip, and they said, oh, I thought this was Pew Suter. I'm like, he's 5 inches taller.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Come on.
Anyway, so, but Pew Suter, like, my point is Pew Suter, if you met Pew Suter and he was like, I'm a professor of chemistry, you'd be like, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, when Pew Suter puts the glasses on, there's a lot of dudes around Vancouver that look like Pew Suter.
100%.
So I can see making the mistake at that point.
Totally, dude, totally. Anyway.
He fits in very well here.
He is a very good player. And I think the truth is that they're going to miss him more than we realize, because he helps you win games more than you realize.
Yep.
And so, you know, in terms of my old run it back thing, the Canucks are running it back with a 90-point team that has missed the playoffs 4 or 5 years and absent their third best forward.
It's subtracting Suter for Kane at this point.
Right. And the obvious fan answer to that is, well, Kane's an upgrade. I mean, there are things that Kane is an upgrade on. He is faster.
Mm-hmm.
He's larger.
He's bigger. He does get in people's faces. He hits.
And then people will be like, well, he consistently scores 20 goals. It's like, yeah, a lot of them on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
Like 5-on-5, he doesn't have a goal scoring edge necessarily on Pew Suter. Versatility wise, you can't play Evander Kane at center. On and on down the list. Like, I don't think it's, put it this way, I'm not going to say it's not an upgrade, but I'm not going to suggest to you that the jury should not be out on that one. That one is very, very close, wafer thin.
Yes, it's different for sure.
Different.
And, you know, it's funny because I was saying, like, Pew Suter is one of the most anonymous players or least flashy players relative to the salary he's about to get, the role he can play for a team in the NHL. And I mean, Evander Kane is very much the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Like, Evander Kane is never escaping notice, whether it's off the ice or on the ice. You're noticing Evander Kane out there. And then the question with Evander Kane is how much is it translating to help the team win? It's kind of almost the exact inverse of the Pew Suter situation.
We didn't do defense. Let's do defense.
All right. I mean, it's got to be Hughes Hronek, right?
Mm.
You think they're going to go away from it?
I think they'll go Hughes Hronek.
Okay. I think it's going to be pretty straightforward. I think it's going to be Hughes Hronek. I think it's going to be Marcus Pettersson and Tyler Myers. And then I think to start, it's going to be Derek Forbort and DPD. And I think Tom Molander is going to have to wait for his chance. Unless he really, really blows the door down
in
training camp.
I think they're going to want to give him a look right away. And I think we're going to see Marcus Pettersson with Tom Molander and Elias Pettersson with Tyler Myers. And then I think that at the end of the games, you'll look at the score sheet. And in fact, Myers and Pettersson have played
yes.
a lot of shifts together and
yes.
are actually the second pair.
Yep.
But yep. I think they'll start that way. And I think, you know, the truth is Derek Forbert, even by design, and we talked about this when he signed, right? He's probably a 50 to 55 mm-hmm. point per game,
50 game.
50 yeah. game per season guy.
50
because,
point Derek Forbort yeah, would be incredible.
Because, you know, he's plays a black and blue style, and it's hard to stay healthy when you're playing the way Derek Forbort plays the game. And then in goal, what's the split?
So I can't think, like, assuming they're both relatively healthy for the season, is there any reason Thatcher Demko should play more than 50 games?
Oh,
I can't think of
absolutely
any.
Not.
Absolutely not. And so, and it probably you want it to be more like 45, 37. That would be the number I'd be aiming for.
Sure.
So it's not the straight 41, 41, and you're, you know, there's some allowances obviously there for injuries and you have to use a third goalie and all that, but like
45, 37 sounds great.
45 as a ceiling.
Yep.
For Thatcher, like a soft ceiling at 45, an absolute hard ceiling at 50 for Thatcher Demko.
And this, by the way, gets to the heart of, I'll end Canucks talk with a bit of like classic critical Thomas Drantz analysis.
Yes.
This gets to the heart of why I am nervous about the Demko extension, right? The range of probabilities on Thatcher Demko, right? Because the team has Lankanen in the fold, and because we know that the right way to use Thatcher Demko at this point is going to be do everything possible for him to dominate in the playoffs, right? Like, the way you win the Thatcher Demko, like retaining Thatcher Demko, is to get hot one single time with him in net, May and June, and secure ultimate glory. Like, that's how this bet pays off. And in order to sort of have that happen, you know, you're going to, as we said, 47-ish games is sort of the max. Well, if you look across the 4 years since Thatcher Demko took over as the number one goalie after the Canucks bought out Braden Holtby, he's averaged 42.5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And largely that's been because of injury, not performance. It's not like he's been losing his job. It also hasn't been because the Canucks have been utilizing some sort of...
like a really disciplined split of
right.
their goalies.
It's not Allmark Swayman.
No.
Right? It's very different than that. And if you look at the other guys, like, do you know how many games over the same period of time Connor Hellebuyck, who also is going to have an $8.5 million cap hit when Demko's extension kicks in, do you know how many games per year he's averaged?
60.
63.5.
Wow.
Vasilevsky, who's also over 8.5, do you know how many games he's averaged?
I don't know.
59.5.
Yeah.
Sergei Bobrovsky, he's at about 57. And then Igor Shesterkin, he's over 55. Like, we're talking about 13-plus additional games at the low end for the guys who make 8.5 or more in net. Now, you do have the Swayman and Sorokin, I guess, would also be at 8.25. He's also over 50, well over 50. And then you get to sort of the Ullmark Swayman tier. Both of those guys are at 8.25, and they're closer comps for Demko because they used to exist in that split with one another.
Yep.
Where, you know, their average is closer to like 47, but you're still talking about a five extra games. Now, the thing about what you're paying for when you're paying a goaltender is you're paying for team save percentage, right? Demko's managed a healthy save percentage some years less so. He's a 9-10 goaltender across his career. But the Canucks team rank by save percentage in the 4 years since he became a starter, 7th, really good. 31st, not very good. He was injured a lot that year. That was the Spencer Martin mm-hmm. season. 7th in 2023-24. We all know that was fun. And then 25th last year, where Demko had three lengthy injury-related absences. In order to really justify an $8.5 million valuation, like, Demko needs to be playing 55-plus games, right? Just given what the market tells us about workhorse starters and their market value. And by design, with Lankanen already signed, not to mention Demko's sort of unique availability concerns, you don't want him to play like that.
No.
So it's not that I, you know, have any fade position on Demko remaining healthy or being an excellent goaltender. I don't. I look at this, though, and say, the Canucks have effectively bet against themselves here. And that makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, it's you're hoping, I think, that you're in the playoffs and he's healthy and fresh and ready to go, and that's where you make the money. That's where you earn the surplus value of the deal.
You get Demko at his dominant best in the right 2.5 month stretch, yep. and you achieve glory, fine. But I mean, you also have to make it there.
Yes, that for sure. You absolutely have to do. And we got just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to shout out this text from Mark, actually. It was entered incorrectly into the database of the Dunbar Lumber text line. Mark, formerly from Yarrow, who says, yeah, I was like, that's an interesting name. Before the Canucks traded for Miller, was he on the radar for all NHL teams? Who out there now could compare? Obviously hit with the Canucks. Who knows? Maybe off the radar, there was someone out there now as a second line center. The big difference with the original JT Miller trade, the one that brought him to Vancouver, is that was in the flat cap era, right? So
Tampa Bay had to
do it.
Yes.
Had to part with a promising young player who could step into a bigger role with a different team.
But also, he wasn't a center. He was acquired as a winger.
Wing, yeah. And he was acquired to be Bo Horvat's winger.
Yeah.
But the overall point of unexpected player who could suddenly become available, it feels like that's very much what Alvin and Jim Rutherford are kind of waiting for at this point. And I don't mean that as like that's a bad strategy. It's true. Guys come available that are not available on July 2nd. And then all of a sudden, maybe in August, maybe in October, maybe in November, whenever it is, there's a player that you didn't expect to be available who is available. And it's just a question of, do you have the ability, the assets, space, all of it to make that happen when it does?
Well, and they're going to have to make it happen. They're going to have to make it happen for this team to reach its ambitions, as we went over. Anyway, this season has been a novel. There were a lot of twists and turns this year, and we had a ton of fun trying to give you the first draft of it every day over the course of this season. It was not the best, I would say, Canucks season, but I think it was the best that our show's ever been.
Sure.
And I had a blast.
Definitely was not the best Canucks season. We can all agree on that.
No.
But it was a truly, truly wild one.
But we had fun.
We had a lot of fun. And all, in all honesty, we do really appreciate everyone listening, everyone who texts in, people who hit us up on Twitter. It means a lot when we're doing remote shows and people come up and say hi. Like, it means a lot. And I think we're proud of what we've done with the show. And we'll sign off with, again, that air of mystery. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk to you in September. But if we don't, have a fantastic summer. And thanks for listening. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Are you sure it's not Jamal Crawford?
It's not Jamal Crawford. He played for the Heat. Dom, do you know who I'm
talking about? Dion Waiters.
Dion Waiters.
Waiters.
Of course.